Hello, hello. Welcome back to the Catholic Bible Pod with Mon. I'm Monica, your host, and today we're talking about St. Francis de Sales. If St. Francis de Sales ran a Bible study, it would be, I can pretty much say with confidence, I mean, gosh, here I am speaking for a doctor of the church, but I'm pretty sure it'd be on the Song of Songs, baby. He loved this book, and I want to love this book as much as he does. I want to get into it. I want to read it because in Francis de Sales' life, this book was pivotal. It changed his life. It transformed his life. He is a doctor of the church. He is a canonized saint. He is known for his amazing writings, Introduction to the Devout Life, Treatise on the Love of God, many letters of spiritual direction to all these different women, most notably Jane de Chantal. But he didn't start there. He started probably where you and I are starting. He started overthinking his life, wondering if, God loved him, a little bit scrupulous. He's got a little bit of a temper, the oldest of a lot of kids, a lot of pressure on him, not sure if he wants to actually follow the plan that his dad laid out for him. And when he encountered Jesus through the Song of Songs, that's when everything changed for him. So, I want to get into the life of Francis de Sales a little bit today. I decided to do this episode this week because Francis de Sales' feast day is coming up. If you're listening to this when it comes out, it's on the 20th. But on the 24th, this Saturday, is his feast day. So get out your, best, finest goods and have a feast for this amazing guy. I have to admit that when I was younger, growing up, kind of understanding and knowing some of the saints, I would put Francis de Sales kind of up on the general men of the church wall alongside like Ignatius of Loyola and Francis Xavier, Francis of Assisi, and I don't know, Vincent de Paul, and was like, I don't really know the difference between all these guys, but I know that they're all like holy men saints who probably wrote something cool, and I wouldn't have been able to pick out any real defining facts from Francis de Sales. So that's kind of where I started, right? And a couple of different times in my life, I picked up Introduction to the Devout Life because it's described as a beginner-friendly book and read like 3 pages and was like, I what? This is not beginner-friendly. I don't know what's going on. I don't feel encouraged. I am not going to do this anymore. And it really wasn't until maybe a year and a half, 2 years ago, when I really met Jane de Chantal, that I really realized how important and significant Francis de Sales was. And I spent the last year or so, 2 years or so, writing the story of Jane de Chantal into the modern day, reimagining her in today's world. If she was my neighbor, what would she be like? What would she do with her time? How would she talk to her kids? What meals would she be prepping? What would she be doing with her afternoons? Jane de Chantal was a perfectionist mom who unfortunately was widowed and had to raise these kids, and she had a lot of drama in her life. She was like blackmailed into living with her father-in-law and taking care of his estate. So maybe not everything in her life is relatable, but I found a lot of the things in her life relatable because I tend towards like perfectionism or towards like it has to be this way and I have to perform these activities in order to be holy, and this is how it is. And when Francis de Sales met Jane de Chantal, he immediately was like attracted to her in the way of, maybe that's the wrong word because it's not, they never were romantic in any way. They never crossed any boundaries. They had a really holy, beautiful friendship. But his heart was attracted to her in that he said to her, like, I think God has entrusted you to me for me to care for you from now on. And she actually had a vision of him when she was being spiritually directed by another guy who was actually kind of harsh and a little bit like spiritually abusive, I would say, like making her really fast and really believe herself to be so low and so far away from the love of God and so unworthy. Francis de Sales, she had a vision of him, and was he the God said, this is going to be your new spiritual director. But it took a while. She met him at a Lenten sermon, but she was like, I don't know, because I don't want to abandon my other spiritual director. I don't want to be weak. I don't want to be wimpy. Remember, she's like this perfectionist mom, right? And she's like, I can do it. I can do the hard things. I can fast in the middle of the night. I can have prayer vigils. I can wear the hair shirt. And Francis de Sales basically was like, hey, we're supposed to be together. I'm supposed to guide you and shepherd your heart. And you need to let go of this desire to control the outcome. And she's like, no thanks, no thanks. It took him a while to like convince her, and then once he did start spiritual directing her, he had her drop every single spiritual practice she had, like all these different fastings and prayings and all these different intense things. He said, stop everything and let me reintroduce you to Jesus, because I really believe you don't know God. You just know like God adjacent. You're worshiping the false idol of like religion, where you're looking like you're doing the right things, but your heart is not in union with God at all, which is such hard thing to hear when you're trying your best and you feel like you're drowning and you're taking care of five kids and you're, you know, but that advice and that spiritual direction from Francis saved her soul. And she and him eventually started a visitation order together, an order of religious sisters, and both became saints. So they kind of come in the same sentence. When you hear Francis de Sales, you think Jane Deschantel. They're like best friends. And they model how intimate a really holy, platonic, okay, just to emphasize that, platonic, holy, good, beautiful friendship can be. And a lot of their letters are kept, and we can kind of see back and forth between them. Anyways, so Francis is not like any other guy in his time period. Unlike his contemporaries, he really focused on the gentleness of God, the romance of God, the tender love of God. In this age, the time that he lived, predestination was a big idea and scrupulosity was huge. And it was like, you just might be, you know, condemned and damned to hell. That just might be a thing, you know, that you can't choose and you can't control. And Francis de Sales was caught in this. He was struggling with scrupulosity because of this idea of predestination. But he came to university, and a Benedictine priest called Gilbert Guenebrard, he taught him the Song of Songs. And that was a turning point in Francis de Sales' life, when he realized this Song of Songs is actually a representation of my relationship with God, that God is the bridegroom and I am the bride, that he wants to pursue me. He wants to be intimate with me. He wants to be in relationship with me. That had like sparked a conversion moment for him. And he let the love of God in. He's now called the Doctor of Love. Okay. There's a researcher that I was reading, a researcher on the Salesians, that called his mother tongue the Song of Songs. Like Francis spoke in the Song of Songs. That's just, he was so deep into it that it was like the like he could quote it so easily. I'm thinking about like, you know, if you've watched Star Wars like 150 times, you know, you meet somebody named Luke and you're immediately thinking, okay, Luke Skywalker, you know, and if you hear anything about like, you hear a quote, it's just like, it pulls you back into the story so quickly because it's just your first language. You know it. That's how Francis was with the Song of Songs. He saw everything through it, every lens, and it influenced everything that he wrote and everything that he did. You can actually see that in Introduction to the Devout Life. He quotes it all the time, for starters. I think there's like 13 direct quotes and then a bunch of indirect quotes. But the crazy thing is, in some of these direct quotes, he actually misquotes Song of Songs just a little bit. Like at one point he adds a reference to earrings in one of the descriptions of the bride. There is no reference to earrings. There's like a reference to her neck and to her chin and to her hair, whatever, but not to her earrings. And scholars believe that it's because he was writing from memory and he accidentally misremembered, he added in something, but it's because he didn't even have to open the Bible and refer to it. He just knew it. He knew the Song of Songs so well. So that's crazy. He refers to God as the heavenly bridegroom all throughout the Introduction to the Devout Life. That's like the name he uses for God, which is so unlike anybody else. He's not calling him like the Lord or his majesty, or, you know, he's calling him the divine heavenly bridegroom. At the beginning of his life, beginning of his career as a bishop, he wrote something called the Mystical Exposition of the Canticle of Canticles. It was a, what's it called? Commentary on the Song of Songs. But he never published it. He probably, you know, some people speculate that he thought it was too personal. He thought it was maybe that he was not qualified to be able to do this type of thing. But his theology is right on point with the rest of the church, that we can accept the love of God as a bridegroom pursuing his bride. We can take the Song of Songs not only as a kind of an analogy of Christ and the church in general, but specifically between us and Jesus. Anyways, I want to read to you a piece of this Introduction to the Devout Life. His main works, if I didn't say it before, are Treatise on the Love of God and Introduction to the Devout Life. And there's this, it's long, but it's worth it. At the end of Introduction to the Devout Life, he kind of gives, at the end of the preface, he gives this desire of his heart. He kind of explains why he's writing this. And he says, "One more thing, dear reader. It is too true that I, who write about the devout life, am not myself yet devout, but I most certainly am not without a wish to become so. And this wish encourages me to teach you. A notable literary man has said that a good way to learn is to study, to better listen, and best to teach. And so, friendly reader, it seems to me that as a bishop, God wills me to frame in the hearts of his children not merely ordinary goodness, but yet more his own most precious devotion. And on my part, I undertake willingly to do so, as much out of obedience to the call of duty, as in the hope that, while fixing the image in others' hearts, my own may happily conceive a holy love. So I rely on the boundless goodness of my God, that while I lead his beloved lambs to the wholesome fountain of devotion, he will take my soul to be his bride, giving me earrings of the golden words of love and strengthening my arms to carry out his works, wherein lies the essence of all true devotion. So I know, he's wordy. Again, like I said, you open up Introduction to Devout Life and you're like, huh? He's writing in his time, okay? He wrote this in 1608, okay? So he's not modern. But I just love this, that he's like, I will write this to help other people, but in the act of helping other people and in the duty of the bishop, I hope that God romances my heart. He says, I hope that God will take my soul to be his bride. He is a romantic. He is a romantic who has fallen in love with God. And honestly, the rest of his life, he spends just trying to get other people to fall in love with God too. So he establishes the Visitation Order. That's like one of his major life works. The Visitation Order and the Salesian Order are actually slightly different, even though Salesian is named after St. Francis de Sales. Salesians were actually started later in his memory, in his honor, I believe by Don Bosco. But there was a famous saint, St. Margaret Mary Alacoque, from the Visitation Order, and she received an image of the Sacred Heart of Jesus. She is a daughter of Francis, right, in the Visitation Order. And she receives kind of in the same line of his own heart, like the romance of God, the tender love of God, the mercy of God, the sweetness of God. She receives the image of the Sacred Heart and Jesus speaking mercy and a message of mercy to him. Okay. He also wrote Treatise on the Love of God. I know I've said that before. I'm so sorry, but he wrote that near the end of his life. And he gives this special thanks to the Visitation Sisters and to Jane specifically for inspiring him and for praying for him and for helping him to get this written. He writes it mostly, you know, with them in mind. But if you open up the Treatise on the Love of God, again, you open it up and you're like, okay, for a guy who loves the Song of Songs, this is a very dry piece of writing. It feels like an instruction manual, okay? It is not like dripping with romance like Song of Songs is. What's the deal here, right? I thought the same thing, but you have to see through it. You have to see through it that everything he writes flows from his own deep conversion. And like the Bible, you can't just pick one line out of Francis and say, this is exactly what he means. You have to read it in context. You have to read it all together, because when he says something harsh, he has said something gentle leading up to it all along. I mean, you can see the humanity in him. He loves bees. He loves nature. He's always talking about bees. He must be a beekeeper. He's like, just like bees do this, just like bees do that. He often talks about Elizabeth of Hungary. And then, of course, he talks about Song of Songs all the time. So he really does have this natural voice of love and the things that he's attracted to. He's like a normal person. He's not harsh and fire and brimstone. He's like, let me show you how this works. Let me convince you and coax you to come reintroduce yourself to Jesus. I recently read a article that came out in 2022 from the St. Charles Borromeo Seminary in Philadelphia, and it explained Francis's love for the Song of Songs and his writing of the Treatise of the Love of God and how they are really linked. I want to read a couple of quotes here. The author says, unlike the biblical poetry, his lengthy work is decidedly analytical. So totally agreeing that it doesn't sound the same, but that doesn't mean they're not connected and very, very interwoven. Okay, next quote. The desire for love expressed poetically by the Song of Songs becomes in the treatise a thought more systematically expressed by our spiritual master. Yet in both, what inspires the saint is a lyrical longing for love. So yes, you might open it up and be like, this feels like systematically stuff. This does not feel like a man in love, but it's the same love expressed poetically. But he's taking it and saying, okay, how can I make this tangible and doable? I'm going to make love into like a manual. It's like a scientific manual for how to love God well. He moves you through different stages, not unlike St. Teresa of Avila with the castle. He moves you through stages of loving yourself, loving others, loving God. So he does it because of a lyrical longing for love. Next quote. In Song of Songs, Francis has so assimilated this song of love that his entire expression is penetrated by it. He has become, in his turn, the true chanter of the love of God. but he wishes that we, possessed in turn by this love, would also sing, and this is the motive for the treatise. I mean, I don't need very much more motivation to read Song of Songs and the Treatise of the Love of God hand in hand, right? Like, God, like, no, Francis fell in love with God, and he's trying to build a bridge for you for how to come across the chasm of, like, misunderstanding to the love that he has found. The author of this article also calls the treatise part manual, part prayer book. And he describes that the Song of Songs is often, you know, it's erotic, it's romantic. And he calls it like spiritual seduction. But, you know, sometimes we read the Song of Songs and we're like, okay, I get the spiritual seduction piece, but what am I supposed to do? Francis fills the gap. He describes the seduction as a movement that God moved first, and he like invited man, the spiritual seduction of God to man, saying, come away with me. And man's reply, man's response, the movement of man towards God, that is like what the treatise of the love of God's all about. Okay. Remember, Francis's whole thing is like the universal call to holiness. That is Vatican II language for a reality that Francis knew before other people did, that it's not just religious people, priests and sisters and nuns and brothers that are called to holiness, but the ordinary modern, not even modern, ordinary lay person is also called to holiness and to a rich prayer life and interior life. And so he's teaching his spiritual directees, often women, housewives, widows, people who have normal lives that don't look very mystical or spiritual, he's teaching them how to access God's love. So I hope I have pulled back the curtain a little bit on maybe why this guy's writing seems dry, but his heart is really aflame and on fire, and he's worth looking into, and he's worth pursuing and following, because I really think this Doctor of Love is aptly named. He really does have a great love of Song of Songs. And so we're going to pretend that he's coming to your living room and he's sitting on your couch and we're saying, Francis, teach us about the Song of Songs. And we're going to try to read some of Treatise of the Love of God and some of Introduction to the Devout Life as we go through the Song of Songs. Okay, so the structure of this little mini series is going to be that every week we read a chapter of Song of Songs and we kind of go into it and pull things out and give you a great foundation so that you can take that and continue praying with it for the entire week. So there are 8 chapters to the Song of Songs, so we're going to do an 8-week series. We might put 2 of them together starting in Lent. In the next couple of weeks, I'm going to do another episode that's kind of introducing you to the book Song of Songs. If you've never been there, what to highlight to show you that the groom speaks sometimes and the bride speaks sometimes and there's a chorus and different things like that. But yeah, I personally hope that you draw close, obviously, to Jesus. That's the ultimate goal, to meet Jesus's merciful, tender, romantic heart in the Song of Songs, but also that you get to know Francis too, because he's just like shepherding you along the way, saying, let me show you this great love. I read recently, maybe last summer, Sincerely Stoneheart by Emily Wilson. Great book, beautiful. She takes the whole, Screwtape Letters concept from C.S. Lewis, the idea that like a demon is assigned a person in order to keep them from heaven, and the tactics that demon will use throughout the day. And she's doing the same thing, but kind of to the modern woman. And I really just liked the idea that she used the word stone heart, because at least for me, that really rung true, that it's not so much that I am angry or antagonistic toward or trying to refuse God's love. It's that I found my heart stony, like for some reason, or a multitude of little reasons. It's like, I'm trying to receive God's love, but I can't. My heart feels stony. And Jane DeChantel actually really showed me the way out of that, to opening my heart to be more receptive. And Jane learned it from Francis, who learned it from the Song of Songs, right? So we're just kind of going back to the source. I think it's fun that Jane DeChantel, she's named Jane Fremont. DeChantel is from the property that she lived at, right? And Chantel means rock. So obviously it's like a rocky property. It has nothing to do with her actual name, but I was thinking rock. So in the little novel I wrote about Jane in the modern day, really harped on that connection. And I felt that was so important, that Jane of stone. That's who she is when Francis meets her. Jane of the stony heart. And then he says, no, we're going to try this again. I'm going to have you restart and start to meet the bridegroom. So if that's you at all, maybe you are Jane DeChantel right now. Like, I see down the line, and I see the hope that you can be Jane, the patron saint of gentleness, and the co-founder of the Visitation Order, the best friend of the most romantic doctor of the church ever. Like, you don't have to be stuck. So if you're like, I don't know, Song of Songs, blech, that stuff's mushy. That stuff feels a little bit too, weird for me. I don't really want to talk about that. You're in good company. Jane didn't either, but Francis won her over. So I hope that he wins you over too. I'm going to read one last piece for you. This is from Introduction to the Devout Life. This is chapter 2, article 12. And he talks about kind of having a secret place with the Lord and a garden, interior garden with the Lord, to use different language that other people have used. So maybe this Lent, I don't know, maybe this is an invitation from the Lord to you to cultivate an interior garden with him through letting him in a little bit more through the Song of Songs. Okay, this is Francis de Sales talking about Catherine of Siena. Okay, when St. Catherine of Siena was deprived by her parents of any time or place for prayer and meditation, our Lord inspired her with the thought of making a little interior oratory in her mind, into which she could retire in heart, and so enjoy a holy solitude amid her outward duties. And henceforth, when the world assaulted her, she was able to be indifferent, because, so she said, she could retire within her secret oratory and find comfort with her heavenly bridegroom. So she counseled her spiritual daughters to make a retirement within their heart in which to dwell. Do you, in like manner, let your heart withdraw to such an inward retirement, where apart from all men you can lay it bare and treat face to face with God? So that's our invitation. That's the invitation of the Song of Songs. Like he talks about a garden in the Song of Songs, the author does, that catch the little foxes in the garden. Like this garden is a place of intimacy, the place of meeting God. And maybe this Lent is a time for you and for me to get the stones out of our garden and to let God transform it again, to be a place just like Catherine of Siena, just like Francis de Sales, just like Jane de Chantel, have an interior place, an interior oratory, a secret garden in our own hearts in which we meet God, no matter what happens throughout our day, even if it's chaotic or really disappointing or difficult or whatever. Okay, I hope you join us next week. I'm not sure what the episode's going to be, but I think like the week after that, right before Lent, we're going to get going with really diving in on the Song of Songs, and there's going to be a free printable download if you want to follow along and pray with it like we are doing. I hope you come back and enjoy that. Until next time, bye!